Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, I've appreciated the opportunity to reflect on my journey to once again glean some incredible insights from my daughter.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. We celebrated our differences last week with National Mentoring Day and 2 days later, International Mentoring Day, and some opportunities to learn more from the Center for Mentoring Excellence on Friday. And so today we're honoring and continuing the elevation of mentoring. I'm sharing with you our third groundbreaking conversation with Dr. Lois Zachary and her daughter, Lisa Fain. They've brought mentoring to a level of inclusive excellency. As role models, they practice what they preach, teach, and write. They are bridging differences for better mentoring in their newest book by the same title that they co-wrote. It's a beautiful book. I encourage you, if you haven't already, to get it. And if you've got employees, buy one for everybody. Dr. Lois Zachary is an internationally recognized expert on mentoring and has been cited as one of the top 100 minds in leadership today. You've likely seen mention of Dr. Zachary's books or read her quotes in the New York Times, Forbes, the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, Inc. Magazine, T&D, Leadership Excellence, the Chronicle of Higher Education, or other business and leadership news outlets. Dr. Lois Zachary and her daughter Lisa are powerful entrepreneurial mentoring team. Dr. W. Brad Johnson, a professor, well, I'm going to come back to him because I'm going to quote him later. And you'll notice in the quote that they are luminaries in the mentoring field. Lisa Fain is the CEO, the current CEO, the transition has happened, of the Center for Mentoring Excellence and the founder of Vista Coaching. She was formerly senior director of the Diversity and Inclusion Function at Outer Wall, Inc. She is a certified mediator through Chicago's Center for Conflict Resolution, and a certified life coach through the International Coach Academy. She graduated with a BS in social policy from Northwestern University and holds a Juris Doctorate from Northwestern University School of Law. She lives in Seattle, Washington, and loves to hike and explore the Pacific Northwest with her husband and two daughters. Dr. Zachary is carrying on her leadership and mentoring work, leaving Lisa to run the day-to-day operations at the center. Thank you for tuning in for our third conversation with both of them. So in this conversation, we will discuss the book that they published together, Bridging Differences for Better Mentoring, Lean Forward, Learn, and Leverage. You will gain insights into building cultural competency through mentoring. We all agree the best way to build a working culture together is by doing it through mentoring, learning on from one person to the next, from one culture to the next, from one generation to the next. It's just beautiful. And we will also discuss a formula that Dr. Zachary and Lisa used to transition the Center for Mentoring Excellence. But first, here is what Dr. W. Brad Johnson says about their book. At last, here is the definitive no-nonsense guide for exploring, appreciating, leveraging, and even celebrating cultural difference in mentoring relationships. Lisa Fain and Dr. Lois Zachary, both luminaries in the mentoring field, deliver the definitive applied toolbox for genuinely inclusive mentorship. Any leader committed to recruiting, retaining, and promoting diverse talent should personally hand a copy of Bridging Differences to every mentor and mentee in the organization. So W. Brad Johnson, as I mentioned before, is a PhD, a professor of psychology at the U.S. Naval Academy and faculty associate at Johns Hopkins University. So thank you for that. That's a wonderful quote that he gave you. How are you, Dr. Zachary?
I am great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's really fun to hear each of you express your histories together. And just, I don't know, it's just such a beautiful thing. And this is the first conversation I'm having with a mother-daughter team, passing the baton from one generation to the next. And it's not like you're not doing anything right now, Dr. Zachary, right? You're continuing your work. It's just the day-to-day is, and you're building out the center together. Tell me how that's working.
I think Lisa is doing an excellent job, and I love the freshness and the curiosity and really the inclusiveness that she's bringing.
Yeah, I think it's so spot on with what our society needs, what the world needs. I love that you're doing it through the Center for Mentoring for Excellence, because that's exactly where it should be. So, Dr. Zachary, when did you start thinking about relinquishing your CEO role?
I think I was ready. You know, they say you know when you're ready to retire.
Yeah.
And I had been working very hard, traveling too much. And I really needed some me time. And I just came to a point where I knew I was ready to let go. And Lisa was ready. So that was really affirmed that.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet that. Were you wondering, is she going to join me? Because you could see probably her path, kind of leading all things leading to the Center for Mentoring Excellence.
I think, if you don't mind, let's let Lisa, why don't you tell the story about how this happened from your perspective, and then I'll chime in.
Oh, that sounds great. Go ahead.
In about 2014 or probably in about 2014, when I was still working in the corporate world, our women's group at my company had wanted a mentoring program. And I called up Lois, my mom, and I had said, what should I do to help them out? And she said, well, why don't you bring me in and I'll train the mentors and the mentees? And I was a little bit hesitant, not because I doubted her capability, but because I managed a budget and I didn't want to ask my boss to hire my mom.
Yeah.
The stars sort of aligned, and she came and trained the mentors and the mentees in our women's group. And I had this moment, Nancy, where at that point, I should say this, I loved working in diversity, equity, and inclusion. It was really a role where I felt like I was contributing a lot, but I also had a lot of frustration. And my frustration was that so many people in the workplace felt like it was somebody else's problem to solve. Inclusion, that is, was somebody else's problem to solve. It wasn't until people had relationships with people who were different from them in the workplace that I started to see the momentum start to shift. And so my mom was up there in front of the room talking about the importance of creating authentic relationships and getting to know one another. And I was sitting there feverishly taking notes, and I had two epiphanies. One was this, I look up and I'm like, wow, I'm thinking to myself, this woman's really good. And I look up, I'm like, oh my goodness, that's my mom. But I hadn't experienced her in a professional context before. And the second was, it was like a connecting the dots moment where I connected the dots between my frustration about change in the workplace not happening until there was individual relationships and mentoring being that tool for that. So shortly thereafter, I went part-time in my day job and part-time in my other day job with working for Center for Mentoring Excellence. And I think I worked part-time for 3 or 4 months. And then I joined Center for Mentoring Excellence full-time in 2016. So we worked together full-time 2016 and all of 2017. And my mom, Lois, retired December 31st, 2017. And I took the helm January 1st of 2018.
Okay, January 1st. There are three things that you did to create a healthy transition that so often in small business does not get done well.
What we did was we worked hard. We talked about the fact that what the purpose was, why Lisa wanted to take the helm, what she was hoping to do, and what the business could be like and feel like so that it was aligned with her values and her passion. And then we had a process. And Lisa got some coaching in between there. Actually, we went to a coach together. and talked about that. And it was interesting because the coach was really tough on me and said to me, do you really think that you can let go after so many years? This is your baby.
Yeah.
And asked some really tough questions. And so that, and it was done in front of her and in front of Lisa. And so we talked about how we were going to make the transition. And Lisa, correct me or jump in anywhere here. But as I recall, we had a lot of conversations. I know I had two notebooks full of notes.
Wow.
And then we made a plan for when, et cetera. But one of the things that I'm really glad I was able to put together for her was an operations manual. So I used OneNote and really developed a manual with all the things day to day, all the contacts, whatever she might need. So Lisa, think about it. What did I forget here? What would make this flesh this out? Purpose, process, and plan.
Yeah, no, I think that really covers it. We had lots of meetings. You took a lot of time to really get that operations manual. I still use it to this day to refer to lots of things. There was a lot of time in the weeds that we had to spend. Where are these files? Where are that those files? What? How are we going to transfer things? What are we going to get rid of? What are we going to keep? How are we going to communicate to clients? One of our top clients we had been working on together for a few years, and there were meetings with that client and explaining what was going to happen. But I think you really nailed it. It was very deliberate, very time intensive. And we really had this agreement to talk about what was working and what wasn't working. We tried to model the stuff that I don't know if we intentionally tried to model it, but I think we really did model what we teach mentors and mentees in terms of communicating, seeking feedback, sharing what's working and what's not working.
Yeah, I think also, Lisa, as I recall, you traveled with us. You trained with me, trained with our other associate. Then you and the other associate worked together. And then you started to, I sent you out and you started to work with other clients with us.
And then you could see how, what your skills you were bringing and...
Yeah. But I think also the way I train and my language was different than my senior associate. And Lisa was able to see different ways of approaching the same topic. And then she brought her own special skills and special stuff to that.
Mm. I also, when I was practicing law, I trained the tens of thousands of employees. It's very different training on facilitating mentoring sessions than doing compliance training. But I had some facilitation experience as well. So it was really honing those skills and then figuring out what my own voice was when I came on board. Yeah. That was different. So that was a real growth opportunity.
Yeah. Was there some intimidation initially that you felt?
I don't think I felt intimidated. My mom went through to great lengths to make me feel like I could show up as myself fully. I don't know that there was intimidation. I certainly didn't have an appreciation for the extent of her impact on the mentoring world until I joined the mentoring world.
Oh,
but
sure.
I wouldn't say that I was intimidated. I was proud. I was impressed. I felt very invited and welcomed and encouraged. But I wouldn't say that I was intimidated. I love being in front of a room, so, for better or for worse. So that part wasn't intimidating to me. But I think what was intimidating or scary, I would use probably the word scary more than intimidating, is here I am taking my mother's legacy and I have to build it into something that's does what she did justice, but also is true to me. That's a scary proposition, but I can't say that I felt intimidated.
How are you addressing your mom's?
Every day I use the material that I learned from her and I adapt it in my own voice, but it's really her foundation and her work that fuels what the center does every single day.
Yeah.
I think one of the other things that in terms of just the process is the networking. And Lisa's gotten very involved in organizations that support mentoring, right?
Yeah, I'm a social animal. It's not that I'm super extroverted. It's just that I really thrive in community. And I don't know that I'm my introverted side, I certainly have it, but I need to operate in community with others. And so one of the things that was essential for me to feel successful in this role was to build community and to network. And it's something that I really enjoy doing. So I've been pretty deliberate about it. And it's something that helps me feel like I get more satisfaction on the day to day when I know that I have that interaction with others outside of my organization on a professional level.
Yeah. So with other businesses, business owners making transition in leadership, I'm hearing from you, both of you, that the purpose, the process, and the plan needs to be deliberate. Getting a coach to help through the process seems to be very beneficial. Is there anything else that a business owner should consider when they're making this transition?
Go ahead.
As Lisa said, the operations manual was very helpful, not only for Lisa, but it was a way to help me let go.
So emotionally, that having a document that you put together that made sure that the concerns that you had were addressed, is that part of what the operations manual did for you?
I don't know that the concerns that I had, but the contacts, the information that you would need, I wanted to make it as convenient, comfortable, and easy for Lisa as possible. So just giving that to her gave me a lot of satisfaction.
Yeah. And Dr. Zachary, you and Lisa published your book together in 2020. And why was it essential, did you feel, to write the book together?
They talk about when you get married or you're in partnership with somebody that you complete one another. And so I feel that was one piece of it. But what we needed to put in the book was knowledge that Lisa had that complemented the knowledge that I had. And it was also a vehicle where Lisa could strut her expertise and bring that out. And I think also, and I don't know how you feel about this, Lisa, but I think it probably provided a foundation for you as you go forth and you write books.
You know, there's a lot more to writing books than just writing. There's all of the citations and the endorsements and the indexes and the table of contents and also thinking about the strategy. And I didn't have any of that. And so learning that from my mom was really terrific. And it was fun to do together. I have to say, as a first-time author, it gave me great benefits to working with somebody who was seasoned and respected, as she is, not the least of which is that we had the opportunity to work with a great publisher, Barrett Kohler Publishers, who we both are very fond of and who has its own network of authors and a mission of creating a world that works for all, that's really aligned with our own values. Being able to do this together really allowed me to have access to that in a way that as a first-time author, I likely wouldn't have otherwise had. But I think the biggest thing was my own passion for this work is really born from diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is a huge passion and value of mine. And the Mentor's Guide certainly touches on that. And we're working on a rewrite of it now, which we'll touch on it even more. But we wanted something that really focused on that angle. And as my mom said, it's a real compliment of what she knows best and what I know best.
Yeah. And I think it doesn't hurt to repeat that there's some misconceptions about mentoring. Dr. Zachary, did you want to answer that question? What is the most common misconception when it comes to mentoring?
I'm going to pass that question to Lisa and compliment. I think there are, let me do that and then I'll comment.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Oh, it's a great question and it's a hard question. I would say the biggest misconception is that mentoring is something that is intuitive, that just because I'm a good leader, I can be a good mentor. I've succeeded. I've gotten where I am. I have some measure of success, so I know how to do it.
It's kind of like a salesperson doesn't always make the best manager.
Yeah, it's a skill and a competency in and of itself, and it takes intention. And it's not about, this is how it was in my day. You need to follow the path that I think you should follow. So that is probably the biggest misconception. The other is that we can get by without setting that we should just go right to the goal setting, or we should just go right to the meat of the matter, and that we don't need to spend time on building the relationship, when in fact, all successful mentoring relationships are built on the relationship.
And if you miss that stage, the relationship never finds its foundational footing.
Yeah, I think also what I would add is the misconception that mentoring is not going to take much time. Oh, sometimes we twist people's arm and say, would you be a mentor? We're short on mentors. We really need somebody. It's not going to take much time.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. But mentoring takes time because it's not just about jumping in and having the conversation, but you need to develop yourself in the role and you need to help develop the mentee so that they are competent and confident about the direction and the path they're taking to build their future.
Exactly. And Lisa, if more companies embrace the idea of mentorship, what changes would you imagine to see in the business landscape?
Well, I think the attraction and retention of top talent, I think the elevation of their brand, the brand of the organizations that do this, I think more innovative ideas. And I think really just the kind of work environments that foster great relationships and great business results.
Exactly. Dr. Zachary, did you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
No, I think Lisa encapsulated that beautifully.
Mm-hmm, me too. And Lisa, and maybe Dr. Zachary, you could add anything you'd like to that. But Lisa, what's the most important message that you would like a reader to take away from your book?
That without inviting a conversation about, let me say it this way, if we only focus on the ways in which we're similar to one another, then we encourage cloning and conformity. But if we can connect because of and not despite differences in our mentoring relationships, then the mentoring relationships will just have exponential results for the mentor, for the mentee, and for the organization.
Yeah, and I think there's this huge fear that people have of having these deeper conversations. Do you think that's because the way that human resources has developed, that the personal issues have been distilled out and that people are not feeling like they can just be real and authentic?
Yeah, I'm laughing a little bit because I explained to you that I was a management side employment lawyer for a dozen years. And I used to tell people not to talk about things like gender, race, sexual orientation, and all of those things. And that was a disservice to my clients. It's not that you can't talk about those. It's obviously that you can't, just that you can't make employment decisions about it. But I think to your question, Nancy, is we've spent so long telling people that conversations about identity are the third rail, that they fear making mistakes. Yeah. We hear over and over again about men who are reluctant to mentor women, not because they're concerned about their behavior, but because they're concerned about being misjudged or misinterpreted or to the optics of it. Thank you. That's exactly the term I was looking for. And I think that the fear is about the optics. The fear is about making a mistake. But the imperative then is to create safe spaces in your relationships where you can have these discussions and you can make mistakes and learn from them. We're going to make mistakes, especially since we are not accustomed to having conversations across difference as a society and as people. So we're going to make mistakes. But how can you create a safe environment? And that takes the skills of trust building.
Yeah. Absolutely. And in your book, you have the three functions of mentoring. You have these diagrams. You have steps for giving hard feedback. You have feedback tips for mentoring partners. You really lay it out there really well. And even the process of different ways in which the conversation goes, the levels of the conversation model. Dr. Zachary, in your book, which is the foundation of all of this other book, of this book too, like you've brought it forward, you describe four parts of the mentoring cycle. What are they that are critical for success in a mentoring relationship?
The first part, and the part that's probably most frequently neglected, is the preparing. It's about preparing yourself for mentoring to ascertain whether or not you are ready. I was talking a few minutes ago about whether I was ready to let go of the business, and Lisa was ready. So it's the same thing in a mentoring relationship. So preparing yourself, and then part of that is also preparing the relationship. And that is the process of getting to know each other. Because if you act as if you know the other person, or you see the other person as having walked in your footsteps or a mirror image of you, then you're not really inclusive.
Yeah.
And what you're doing, you end up mentoring yourself. And that's not helping anybody. So there's the preparing. Then we use the word negotiating before, which is really about establishing agreements. How are we going to be with each other? What kind of ground rules do we have? When we talk about things, what constitutes confidentiality? So it's hard to just say, oh, can I keep this in confidence? Because confidentiality is about assumptions. And when you each make different assumptions, nobody's happy. So it's really important. And then to set some boundaries. And then we talk about something called triggers or hot buttons. And the idea of what are those irritants, those things that irritate you. If I tell you ahead of time that I don't like to take phone calls after 5 and you call me after 5, it's not going to create a peaceful, comfortable time for me because I'm going to resent it. So if I know that, it behooves me to pay attention to that. Then the next phase is the enabling phase. And that is, we're talking about enabling growth. So this is when the mentor supports the mentee, provides stretch challenges, and also helps the mentee articulate and move towards a vision of themselves. It's also the time, it's the longest time, and it's also the time when feedback is given to the mentee and also to the mentor, feedback on the process, how it's going. So often, mentors and mentees are so preoccupied with moving through the phases that they don't stop and reflect on how things are going and what could we do better. And then finally is the phase of coming to closure. And there's a reason why it says coming to closure, because that's a process. And it's a process of talking about how did we do? Did we achieve the goals? What would be my next step? It's a process about celebrating what we learned from each other. It's a process about moving on. So those are the 4 phases in the mentoring cycle.
Excellent. And in preparing the relationship, you explain in your book that there are different levels of conversation model. You go from monologue to dialogue. And I'm just feeling a sense of each one of those needs more explanation than what we can do today. But I was wondering if you would like to just talk a little bit about the progression, like an overview that helps to lead to transformational thinking.
Yeah, so the monologue is a one way. It's when a mentor goes on about his or her or their own career or war stories. And then there's a transaction. Everybody has been involved in transactions. It's just a back and forth conversation. It doesn't go very deep. It's on the surface. And then there's what we call interaction. So it might be about how to do something. It gets us closer to real conversation, but it mostly deals with Q&A. And so while there's an opportunity to go deeper, it's often missed and the conversation just stays on the surface. Where you want to spend your time is in collaborative engagement and dialogue. So collaborative engagement is the level where deeper insights, reflection, and relationship are fostered. So it's where you talk about why, where you probe feelings, reflection. So it's a deeper kind of a thing. It's got texture, it's got body, it's got curiosity, it's got reflection. It takes time. And then there's dialogue. And dialogue is when the conversation goes deeper and the mentor learn from each other. They're not trying to convince each other and they're not trying to tell each other things. They're really open and inquisitive. And something new gets created because of that, new knowledge that they both develop together.
Mm-hmm.
So both parties have their understanding expanded through dialogue.
That's beautiful. Is there anything you would like to add at this point, Lisa, to that conversation that I just had with your mom?
No, she is the expert and she nailed it.
Yeah, I'm feeling very satisfied with how that was explained and is very clear. I love how you started your acknowledging at the back of the book. So I'm quoting here, "We acknowledge each other with love, admiration, and deep gratitude. It is rare indeed that a mother and daughter get to collaborate professionally. What a privilege it has been for us to co-author this book. We encouraged each other to bring our own special magic to bridging differences for better mentoring, and we're able to weave our individual subject matter expertise and varied experiences together to create a book that reflects and elevates our individual strengths and passions," end quote. I don't think a mother-daughter relationship can get much better than that.
Aren't we lucky?
Yes.
We're pretty lucky, I have to say.
Beautiful relationship. What are you both curious to learn and excited to do next? Why don't we start with you, Dr. Zachary?
So I've been taking a lot of what they call Auscher lifelong learning classes here. Mm. So it's exciting to be able to say that there's more to learn than I could ever learn. So I have a full docket there. I'm looking forward to spending more time with friends. I'm looking forward to, Lisa and I are working on updating the Mentor's Guide 3rd edition. So I'm excited about that. And I'm starting to reflect on what are some themes that I've learned from my life. Mm. And maybe putting that together in a book, like Themes from a Mentoring Life, something like that.
Oh, yeah. I totally would love that. I just would read it, and I think it would be a cherished a book that would have so much of us to gain from having a book in our hands. And Lisa, how about you?
Oh, in terms of things doing in the business, I'm spending a lot more time speaking to audiences really all around the globe on how to create inclusive environments through mentoring. I have a keynote that I have been working on that I'm really proud of that combines humor and anecdotes and teaching and all of that to really help organizations understand that mentoring is inclusion in action. So I'm really excited about that. I'm working on the revision of the Mentor's Guide, as my mom mentioned, but I'm also really interested in the subject of developing trust and psychological safety in mentoring relationships. So I've been doing a lot of reading on that, thinking about that, and I'll be doing a lot more writing and teaching on that as well.
That's beautiful. Are you back in person?
Not really. A few things in person, but really doing a lot virtually. And after, 18 plus months of fully virtual, even before that, we were using Zoom far before most of the world was using Zoom, but it's been an evolution to kind of, I won't say we've perfected it. We've definitely gotten much better and able to deliver a great interactive, engaging experience through Zoom in a way now that we wouldn't have been able to do before the pandemic because we just wouldn't have had the practice for it. So we do most virtually.
Fantastic. I just appreciate all the work that you're doing and all the contributions that you've made and any work that you do in reflecting the legacy that you've created would be very valuable for all the upcoming generations to come. We need to keep building a strong foundation of history and mentoring so that we can keep building upon it in a really healthy and important way. So I'm encouraging all of you to get your book. And thank you so much, Dr. Zachary and Lisa Fain, for your generosity and being so open and just sharing your life with us.
Thanks for the opportunity. It's been a fun conversation, Nancy.
Thank you again.
Good. And I'm encouraging all of you, if you haven't yet, please go out and, or you don't have to go anywhere, just order Bridging Differences for Better Mentoring. Thanks for tuning in and have a great week. And Mike Cabea, sound engineer, thank you. Videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. You do a fantastic job with every podcast conversation we've ever done. Thank you so much. You're amazing. All right. He keeps going on and on with his finger circular. Keep going. All right. So we've had a lot of fun here. Hope you've gathered some gems for yourself so that you can become a better mentor yourselves. All right. See you next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a We Mentor Lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.